When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deducci, and this time round, doing for the first time ever a live show. I'm not talking about theatre here. I'm talking about an exhibition, one of those trade fair type things that you would go to called Salute. So when you clicked onto this one and go, really, is he going to do a whole podcast on the art of saluting? No. But it's really interesting. I've been finally to Salute. This is the third time I bought a ticket to it and other things got in the way. But I went with a friend of mine. Shout out to Ben. Hello, Ben. And he has been on many occasions. And so I got a mature eye view to it, but also my quirky eye to it. And therefore, I get to share it with you. But before I do, you clicked onto this about saluting. So let's actually talk about that, because there is a common myth around saluting and where it came from. And I'm going to give you the good stuff. I'm going to give you the best theories. And the urban legend has an element of truth to it, but it's read out like it's firm fact. So let's talk about what a salute actually is, and also the difference between Britain and Britain imperial salutes and American salutes, and how that leads to issues in modern day society, particularly in Britain. So the thing you've probably heard is surely if you've clicked on this, you know what a salute is. You put your hand up to your face, and it's a military thing, a sign of respect, a recognition of a superior officer. The story goes around that in the medieval era, knights had full-face helms, and therefore when they flipped them up, there was a way to recognize, it's like, it's me, Sir Galahad, or whatever. It's me, Sir Geoffrey of Anjou. I am showing you respect, liege, my king, whatever. And that would make sense. Thing is, we don't have that written down anywhere. We figure that they would have lifted up their visors to talk to each other, because you can't really tell who's underneath the helmet, particularly in the early medievals with the classic bucket helms. But that, again, causes problems with the saluting thing, or the lifting up of the lid, because it didn't have a lid to be lifted up. You just removed the entire helmet. So, yeah, that's a little bit harder. Then when we get to the High Middle Ages, you would have the lord on a horse, and quite often they'd have their crest of arms as a papier-mâché affair on the top of their head. Now, why was it so fragile? Because you wouldn't want something made out of solid wood, or even worse, metal, because then it'd be unbearably heavy to wear. But if my symbol was, let's say, a cockerel holding a laurel leaf, that's relatively easy for somebody to make, and therefore I don't need to lift my visor for everybody to know that it is Jem, Count of Anjou, underneath the helmet with the cockerel holding the laurel leaves. So, yeah. Then we come to the first ever actual explanation of what a salute is from a British Army ordnance from 1745. Now, just a tiny bit of history here. It's the 1600s when things move over from plate armor and full face helms and stuff like that to the hats. All the hats that people would be wearing for the next 200 odd years in military history. So This probably predated 1745, but certainly by 1745, the vast majority of people would be wearing hats, or let's say everybody would be wearing hats. The other thing that's worth pointing out when it came to helmets, actual steel helms, they would only be for the rich anyway. So this ritual of like recognizing each other, for starters, a whole bunch of grubby peasants in their at best leather armor, but usually just their tunics and their whatever hat they might have to hand. The king doesn't want to talk to them anyway, nor does the Count of Anjou. So this is obviously a senior ranking thing in the feudal era. We're past the feudal era when we get into the 1600s. The last time that we can talk about this is arguably the War of Three Nations, English Civil War, call it whatever you want, where you got a lot of the cavalry actually wearing, it's not a full face helm, but it's a helmet that protects the neck. And at the front, there's almost like an American football style series of bars to stop people from just slashing you in the face. So, okay, fair enough. But like I say, once we're into the 1700s, nobody's wearing armor on the battlefield. Everybody's got hats, very important hats. And these hats are getting quite clunky. Think of, particularly in the 1700s, the tricorn hat, the three-cornered hat. They're very popular. We could be talking about the Seven Years' War. We could be talking about the War of American Independence. We could be talking about the War of Spanish Succession or Austrian Succession. All these wars, lots of tricorn hats everywhere. But anyway, in this ordnance book in 1745, it seems that possibly prior to that, people would remove their hat as a sign of respect, which is something that anthropologists and historians would agree would have gone way back. Taking your hat off, taking any kind of headgear off when somebody important walks into a room is a sign of respect. Indeed, it's almost forgotten that even in the Victorian era and the early 20th century, when hats were everywhere, hats aren't really a thing anymore in civilian life. You would always take your hat off, or bonnet if you're a woman, when you went into a home. It would be impolite to be sitting there with a hat, and this is actually sometimes a historical inaccuracy in movies made by somebody today that doesn't get the etiquette of what you would do in formal dress 100 years ago.
Take your hat off.
A little sidebar there. We managed to get into a lot of hats here. But anyway, the Ordnance Order in 1745 specifically says that you should slap your hand against the hat. So rather than removing it, kerfuffling everywhere, maybe there's a massive feather in it and that's going to cause problems, just sort of put your hand against the hat, making a little noise. And therefore, that's a recognition that I've moved and shown you respect to the general, the lord, whoever, who is marching past or riding past on their horse. There we go. So that is the origins of the salute. However, with a lot of Hollywood movies, because they are American, they salute in the American way. What does that mean? As they bring their hand up to their face, their palm is face down to the ground. So their fingers are perpendicular 90 degrees to their face. And we've all seen emotional movies, scenes in movies where people salute at funerals to show how much they love the passing of their whoever, best friend or leader or whatever. Or we might actually see it in the middle of a battle scene to say, I respect you, I see you, and I'm going to go up that hill and get the thing. That's American. Britain, hey, same kind of cliches in movies, no doubt about that. But it is not palm down, it is palm 90 degrees to the ground. So as you put your hand up, you have your fingernails, in essence, touching your forehead, and you have the palm of your hand facing out with your face. And that looks odd, because there are so many American military movies, and actually very few British military movies where anybody salutes at any point, so therefore, it looks odd. I remember as a kid, Benny Hill, weird lead into this, don't worry, we will get into Salute the Show in a moment. The irony is everybody at Salute will know who Benny Hill is. Benny Hill was a comedian, a British comedian, weirdly hugely popular behind the Iron Curtain and also in America. He lasted into the 1980s. Clever wordplay, slapstick comedy, this is why it was kind of popular around the world. But critically, it would always end where he was lusting after various women, which would lead to various groups getting angry with him. And the classic thing is he is chased around to this specific music, all sped up for comedy purposes, he never gets the lady. Sometimes he would stand there and he would do the British salutes. Benny Hill is of that generation who had to do his national service. But he would also be sort of tongue sticking out and sort of half winking, and he just looked foolish. And as a child, I thought, not only is he looking foolish, but he's also doing the salute wrong. Whereas actually the joke was, I'm doing the salute perfectly well. This is exactly what the army would want, but my face is a mess. So it shows you how comedy can change over the time. But interestingly, that sort of bawdiness, and the classic thing is he'd walk past a sort of attractive young woman and he would knock something and it would tear off all their clothes. And of course, they're always wearing lacy or lingerie underneath it. Very sexist, very problematic in the modern world. But even in the 1980s, we worked out that's not what we should be doing anymore. There we go. So I have gone all the way through the history of the salute and also the history of Benny Hill. We are nearly 10 minutes into this, and I still haven't taught you anything else.
Rimmer, is this salute ever going to end?
Nearly finished, sir. It's my very special extra-long salute I reserve for the especially important, sir.
But you came here for the saluting. I have now thoroughly done the history of the salute. Now let's get into the show. I do occasionally episodes that are around Warhammer. And Warhammer is an example of a TTRPG, a tabletop roleplay game. You roll dice, you've actually got figures on the table, and you move stuff around. The interesting thing is, there are loads of these games. Yes, the big granddaddy of these fantastical type games is Dungeons & Dragons. But the people behind Warhammer, a company called Games Workshop, they are by far and away the largest organization that does this stuff in the world. They beat everything else. Yes, we've now got Dungeons & Dragons that's now owned by Hasbro, which is obviously a much larger company, but Hasbro does lots of other things apart from Dungeons & Dragons. But in the case of Games Workshop, all they do is stuff around their IPs of Warhammer 40,000 or Warhammer Age of Sigmar or Warhammer Old World or Blood Bowl, which is a fantastical version of rugby, only with fantastical elements such as ogres and dwarves and so on and so forth. The ball has got spikes on it. You can use it as a weapon. And Warhammer Old World, let's throw that in there as well. And the books are there to promote the IPs of these various different things. And you got the figures, you got the rule books, you got the dice, you got the paints, you got the glue, so on and so forth. They have in the UK, if you know what I'm talking about here, they are actually as a company valued more higher than Marks and Spencer's. That's an awful lot of little plastic toy soldiers they've got to sell to be worth quite literally billions. And they are a global brand. They have shops and IP all around the world. At the time of recording, we hear that Amazon is going to do a Warhammer 40,000. Could be a TV show, could be a movie. A little bit unclear at the moment. But they don't mess around with tiny little organizations. They consider it a serious IP that could be utilized. Therefore, they dominate. They're like a black hole sucking everything in. Most people will either learn about either TTRPGs or just straight roleplay games through either Dungeons & Dragons or Warhammer. And that's about it. Now, there is nothing stopping Dungeons & Dragons or Warhammer going to Salute. And indeed, Salute is a celebration of tabletop games. Not exactly board games, although some of them do border on it, but quite a lot of them are simulations of World War II, and I'll come on to that, battles. But there are fantastical elements, there's completely unique ones. There was one this year that was a game version of the movie The Thing. You know, the Kurt Russell 1980s movie where he's trapped in Antarctica in this surveying station. There's a weird monster that's growing inside everybody. Brilliant movie. Really fun game. Ben and his boys actually played it. They had a chance to play it while they were there. There's Star Wars Legions. There are loads of Star Wars X-Wing, for example. So there's the space combat one. There's the other one, like Warhammer. You can build your stormtroopers, paint your stormtroopers, and then roll six to hit kind of thing. So there are all kinds of things there. But it was noticeable, and everybody knew beforehand, Warhammer wasn't going to turn up, and nor was Dungeons & Dragons. Because this is the situation where they are so big, so well known, they don't need to pay to go to a show to have a stand to show everybody, hey, look, there's this cool game. And indeed, some people were playing games on really ornate tables of Warhammer 40,000 specifically. And Like at all of these types of events, there was a painting competition, and there were loads of figures from loads of different organizations, but there was a hefty amount from Warhammer, even though they weren't there. They're the sort of company where if nobody had brought a game to play of Warhammer, of a figure to have painted, that would have been really weird, because they are just that dominant in the marketplace, and therefore they just don't need to be there in any official capacity. However, what you've got is two types of organization that are there. You've got the smaller companies. A great example would be, and a shout out to, Warlord Games. Now, actually, the people who founded Warlord Games were some of the people who left Games Workshop many moons ago. And they've created a game, for example, like Bolt Action, which is a World War II skirmish game. Very different to the likes of Warhammer, not just in terms of setting, but also mechanics as well. And they make lots of figures too. I am less of a fan of Warlord Games. This shows you why Warhammer's so dominant. Because Warhammer, 30 years ago, most of their stuff was in white metal, which was awful to put together and limiting in terms of what you could cast and limited in terms of how much detail you could have on the models as well. In every possible way, moving to plastic evolved the game. Also, it made it a little less difficult, well, just better in every possible way. A lot of Warlord stuff, sometimes it's resin, sometimes it's metal, sometimes, I got two kits from them, which was a mixture of resin and metal. That was awful to put together. But there's more character, and you can tell that the sculpts are actually done by artists. Physically, the way you would design a figure is you actually build it out of clay or some kind of modeling material, and you sculpt it in a way that I couldn't possibly do. And then it might be, let's say, 30 centimeters tall, and then they're able to scale it down to be 28 millimeters or whatever scale you need it to be at. Whereas you can just tell nowadays with the modern Warhammer kits, they are designing it on computer-aided design. Now, that's not cheating or anything. It gets clean aligned and so on and so forth. And it does mean that things, the gun really looks like a gun. It doesn't look like it's a gun that was at one point made out of plasticine. It's a little bit sort of curved on the edges. So it's cleaner in every possible way. But you do lose a little bit of the charm. You do lose a little bit of the handcraftedness that made Games Workshop originally so popular with people. But you're seeing this again with Crooked Miniatures or Warlord. There are loads of them. So you've got a company like Warlord that has Pike and Shot or Black Powder, loads of game systems, and they sell presumably nowhere near as much as Warhammer around the world, but they do sell. They're a proper company with premises. They have manufacturing on site. You can order online, etc. All this stuff. Tick, 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 tick. I will give you two other examples that were there. So about 10 years ago, Warhammer was losing its profitability. It was losing its love with the audience as well. And it's done a very good job in the last, let's say, 8 years of engaging with the community again and having a bit of a personality rather than almost ignoring everybody. Just buy our stuff and we'll do our own thing. They are far better at engaging with the community. They don't always get it right. And what is interesting, and they still need to learn about this, is when they do make mistakes, they have a very hard time of admitting that they were mistakes. They have on several occasions just flat out gaslit people. An example would be a box set called Cursed Earth when it first came out. It came out at the time of COVID. Clearly, they and everybody else had logistical problems putting this stuff together. But it was sold as like, this is going to be a new game system that will be out forever. So don't everybody freak out if you don't get a copy on day one. Unfortunately, it sold out completely and clearly they had real difficulty starting it up again. And they flat out just sort of said, well, this was always going to be a limited time thing. No, you specifically said it wouldn't be a limited time thing. And then as everything settled down in 2023 or whatever, it came out again. But they pretended as if, oh, yes, yes, it's back again. And, you know, it'll be available for as long as you want. It's like, so what were you saying? They was limited a couple of years ago. So just, you know, they don't always get it right. But they also do a lot of good stuff as well. However, one of the most controversial things they did was up until a few years ago when they were doing painting tutorials. And this was a real game changer for me. Again, imagine the 1980s, pre-social media, pre-the-internet. You had to read a magazine how to paint stuff, and you're seeing the stuff in the magazine. It's like, that's amazing. How'd they do that? And it isn't actually very well explained, because it's explained by an artist who assumes you've got the same skill level as them, which I didn't have. Whereas with a video, you can literally see the paint going onto the figure step by step as somebody talks you through how to mix paint or how to thin the paints in a way that doesn't change the fundamental pigmentation. And yeah, thank goodness for all of these. But for years, you go, hi, it's me, Duncan, and I'm going to show you today how to paint a towel suit, battle suit or something. Good. Hi, Duncan. And Duncan, over the years, got a lot of coverage. So did Louis Sugden and others as well. However, in 2023, they were clearly worried about some of these people leaving the company. It's like, oh my goodness, well, if everybody likes Duncan and Louise, or Peachy, and there's another one, it's like, well, you know, are they going to take anybody with us? So now we're just going to do hands. We're not going to tell you who it is. It's just going to be voice, and we're going to see hands here. And do you know what? People sort of went, again, you're taking the personality out of this hobby. This hobby isn't just paint this, glue it together, roll the dice, buy the book. It's like, it's actually meant to be fun. If you're just going to be corporate about it, you're losing some of the raison d'etre of the entire hobby in the first place. Now, what has any of this got to do with Salute, I hear you ask? Because using the two examples of Duncan and Louise, known as Sughammer, because she's Louise Sugden, brilliant Scottish accent, by the way. She's great to hear.
What is your accent? I can never work it out. My accent, I'm not really sure. I am from Scotland, and I like to think my accent is maybe weird, chronically online Scottish. Let's go with that.
So in the case of Duncan, he left about the same time as COVID. Clearly it's coincidence. He's a brilliant painter, and he created Duncan Rhodes's Painting Academy, which you can go online and you can follow and you can become a subscriber, Patreon, etc. You know, if that's what you want to do, he does great painting tips and advice. Now, admittedly, there are a lot of people who do it, and there are lots of very talented painters out there. But do they have the almost cachet of like they were one of the official painters of Games Workshop? Now, turns out he's not the only one to have left, but starting off with Duncan, he's got this calm voice. He's extremely talented. He's very careful with how he explains the tutorial videos. That's what he was like at Warhammer. And both he and the cameraman both left at the same time, set up this Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy. But also, about a year into it, he decided to take another...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A big step. Citadel paints, which is the paints from Warhammer Games Workshop, are very, very good, but they're also pretty expensive. And sometimes they just cut out some of the range. It's like, oh yeah, you know that paint that you've been using for ages on that army over there? Yeah, we're not going to make it anymore. What? Well, how am I meant to make new units look like the old units? It's like, that's, why are you doing that? That's annoying. And so, yes, they're not perfect. As I said, Games Workshop, not perfect. So Duncan Rhodes, whose motto was always to get better quality paint and control, rather than glooping on the paint, two thin coats of paint is always better than just one gloopy paint. Now, admittedly, I don't tend to do too thin coats. I just like to get stuff painted. I'm not aiming to be as good as Duncan, because I never will be. But he has shown various tips and tricks which I've picked up over the years. This is the great thing about these tutorial videos. You can choose how much of it you actually use in every day. In the case of Duncan, I did pay attention a fair bit, and so he created his own paint range. But he, as he said in several interviews, this is the thing about these painters. They're clearly not rock stars. They don't love the roar of the crowd or anything like that. They're quite introverted, might be a bit strong, but they're not looking for the limelight. But he felt that there was a need out there and he was hoping to reach it. And so he ran it on Kickstarter and he managed to get, it was something like £250,000 pledged in the first 24 hours. Clearly, he caught on to something. And at the time of recording, he's on the third range of paints. So he started off with the basic paints. You know, everybody needs a blue, everyone needs a green, everyone needs a red, everyone needs a metallic for guns or swords or helmets and armor, etc. So he did the basic paint range, and then he went into slightly more exotic paints in the second phase, and even more exotic colors and tones in the third paint range. Good for him. But what was lovely to see, he was there with his company, and it was a relatively big stall, and there was a breakout area where he had a chance to play around with the paints, because this is one of the things, he can talk about the paints all he wants to on the screen. That's not the same thing as you actually mucking around with them, and then you realise, oh yes, these do have a better feel, in inverted commas, than a Citadel paint or whatever. Army painter, there are loads of paint companies out there. So it was great to see him. He was promoting a company, and clearly it was good enough for him to have a decent-sized stand, even though that company didn't exist 5 years ago, and it was busy. I would have loved to have gone up to him and shook his hand, but there was a pretty large queue of people waiting to talk to Duncan, and, you know, there are other guys out there as well, waiting to take your orders and help you, and I'm sure they were lovely, but of course, they weren't Duncan. It's the same with Louise, who actually left far more recently. At a guess, I think it's been about 15 months since she's at least officially left Games Workshop, and she created her own Sughammer. Rogue Hobbies is what it is on YouTube. If anybody's interested, have a look at that. She went in a different direction, because I guess one of the problems is, well, how many more paint ranges do we need? Games Workshop does a pretty good paint range. Might be pricey, but if you want slightly cheaper, but also a great paint range, there's Vallejo, there's Army Painter, now there's Two Thin Coats. It's like, she's not going to do as well. A gap has been filled by Duncan. That gap doesn't really exist anymore. But what she's always loved is goblins. And so she's got her range of minis. They're actually much larger than the Warhammer ones. They're more like one goblin will like fit in your hand. But they're not the goblins in the style of Warhammer. They're very much the goblins in the style of fairy tale books from like 50, 60 years ago. Big ears, kind of goofy looking, fun, silly type goblins. They're clearly having a lot of fun. They don't have pointed teeth and like serrated knives ready to stab in you. They're more fantasy creatures, and one of her favourite moulds or sculpts of goblin is one that's just fishing. He's not harming anybody except, I guess, fish. And again, I wanted to go over and sort of shake her hand and sort of say, you know, well done, how's it going? But again, huge queue. People wanted to see her. And also, there was, in all of these kind of conferences and exhibitions, there's always a stage where there would be Q&A sessions with people, or people do like little lectures and talks about certain things. And I noticed that she was on one. And as I walked through another one that was about how tabletop gaming started, that was about a quarter full. But the one where she was in it, admittedly, she was part of a panel talking about painting, but she was the one talking at the time. She's really eloquent, really energetic, enthusiastic. She's got more energy than Duncan. I guess Duncan's a bit shyer, but it was a full house as people wanted to sort of like hear her talk. Well done her. She had a stand there. She was selling the goblins, and she had done a really good job online on things like social media saying, hey, I've got a stand, come and see me, meet me there. And then I noticed afterwards, the day afterwards, she did a really classy thing. It was like, thanks very much for coming, and just sort of like sharing her success with people. I was in the exhibitions industry for a long time. This exhibition happened in Excel, and Excel I've spent literally months in over my career. I know exactly how the place works. Fun fact about Excel, it's the largest exhibition hall in the UK. That's not the fun fact. It's in London, very much in East London, near Docklands. And the first Batman Begins Christopher Nolan movie, there's no way Greg can put anything in here because it's just sound. But if you see the scene where Morgan Freeman is talking to Christian Bale, or talking to Batman, Bruce Wayne, and he's saying, I need a vehicle. And so he shows an ex-army vehicle called the Tumbler.
Well, the Tumbler? Oh, you wouldn't be interested in that.
At that stage, it's in camo colours. And he says, oh, you know, here it is in the practice room. Now, that's a real vehicle. You know, they had to build it for the movie, but it's a real vehicle. It's not a little remote-controlled car. And it is zooming around a massive hall. If you know Excel, you know that that is Excel. And you can actually see, I can't remember, if it says N, then it's the North series of halls, or if it says S, it's the South series of halls. And they're just massive. The thing about an exhibition hall, some people occasionally think when they go to whatever trade fair it is, or, you know, consumer show, as Salute would be, it's like, does the stand stay here for a whole year and then everybody comes back? It's like, no. The day before everybody arrives, everybody builds their stand. And sometimes you might give them more than one day if it's a particularly complex series of builds. So what you do as the organizer is the show might be 3 days, but you actually hire the hall for 7 days because it's going to take a few days to set it all up. Then the show happens, and then it might take a day to break it all down. But by the end of the week, literally everything has to go. Now, Salute was big enough to take up 3 halls on the south side. I have worked at one of the few shows that have taken up the entire of XL, both sides, front and back. And that's something called World Travel Market. You rack up literally miles as one of the organizers. I mean, I was one of many people working on the show, but you have to keep walking the show. You are literally doing half a marathon every day as you're going up and down the aisles. People quite often wear pedometers to see actually how many steps they do. It really keeps you fit. And also a word of warning, even if you're at Salute, which is just a one-day event, any kind of event or show, because you're walking on hard concrete, that's to allow big trucks to come in and load and offload stuff that you're never going to see. Very hard floor, so wear your most comfortable shoes, please. But the other thing is, because of the environment, you get really badly dehydrated. If you don't drink a lot, and there are loads of bathrooms around the place, don't worry about that. And they're all going to be in good working order because they gotta. It's all part of the contract. So please, please do drink lots and lots of water, or otherwise you will end up with a splitting headache. That's what happened to me on my very first exhibition. And somebody at that stage who was old compared to me went, this is why it's happening to you, Joe. I was like, oh, right, okay. And I never had a problem again doing that. So there you go. My advice to you. Just helping you live your life slightly better. So you've got Louise there promoting her goblins, and she almost sold out. You've got Duncan with a big old stand there, and also it's great to see some of his painted stuff with obviously his own paints sitting there in cabinets. This is stuff you've seen on YouTube, and you look at it so closely, and you're like, wow, that's really subtle blending and beautiful shading and all this kind of good stuff. The man's a master, as is Louise. You know, no disrespect to her. And what's great about it is both of them are great in different ways. So anyway, the thing about the show is, so you've got companies like Warlord, like Duncan, maybe Louise is more on the borderline, but these are actual companies with offices and so on and so forth. But then there are the enthusiasts, and there are loads of mat manufacturers. So you've got like realistic looking grass mats, or it could be MDF tile type buildings, so you can quickly build an office block if you're doing a modern day game, or ye olde church if you're doing a medieval type combat game, whatever. So there are lots of companies there, miniatures, so on and so forth, actual game systems as well that aren't Warhammer. But then you've also got the hobbyists, the enthusiasts. There was one there where Ben, my friend, said, oh, you know, they were there last year, and it's just two old guys, and they've built this game, which is kind of like from the Zulu era, the 1870s, and maybe you can buy the rules online for a couple of quid, but this is not the way that they are making their money. They're probably retired. But this is just what's keeping them happy. And so you have these people standing next to these beautifully designed boards. Salute happened over the weekend. Please go on to my Twitter and you're going to see photos of me wandering around there. So you've got the enthusiasts. I walked up to one table. So one area that's very, very popular are Napoleonics, because you've got big blocks of brightly coloured uniforms and things like that. And I said to them, is this are you actually doing a real battle? And went, no. Basically, the scenario here is that Napoleon had a funny feeling about a potential ambush round Waterloo, so he moved west. So what we've got here is we've still got the British army, but the Prussians are coming on in a different way, and the old guard are going to be arriving later, and these beautiful layout of like these fields and buildings and so on and so forth, with hundreds of figures on the board. I've never played Napoleonics, but this is a classic of the more war simulator type ones, World War I, World War II, the Napoleonics, etc. Things like the historicals, in inverted commas. So it could be, another thing I saw was Carthaginians fighting Romans. So it's all got to be sort of historically accurate figures. No flying saucers, please. And they are a sight to behold. I just look at it and think, I don't have time to paint 100 Prussian cavalry, which is what you really need to get a feeling for something of the scale of the Napoleonic Wars. And then I have to get them accurate. It's not just like I paint them whenever I want. That's the great thing about Warhammer. And it's all set in the future. Paint it however you want. Even something like the Ultramarines that are meant to be blue. I don't know, maybe a bunch of them got stranded on a planet where the background is all brown, so they decided to paint their suits brown. You do you. Just have fun with it. So the Napoleonics tend to have an older generation. And this is what I found hilarious. I found my people. You want paunchy, middle-aged dads with receding hairlines? Boy, this place is full of them. And therefore, it had this dad energy to it. And I mean that in a good way. These people are used to wrangling enthusiastic kids. So when the kids come up to the boards, they're not like, oh, what do you want? It's like, hi, you know, here, have a look. The guy started talking to me about Napoleonics. He went, have you ever played? He went, no, I haven't. No judgment. In fact, his actual response is, boy, you're smart. He goes, you start getting sucked into this. It takes up all your time and energy. It's like, you know, he was having a laugh about it at his own expense. It's just a great vibe. If it's one of these things where you just want to dip your toe, I do appreciate any hobby. There are the gatekeepers, the neckbeards, as they're referred to quite often in this industry or this hobby, particularly online. There are some horrible people out there. But the great thing about a day like Salute is they just want to share their hobby. They just want to have fun. I bought one thing that I was trying to be good, and I went to Crooked Games or Crooked Figures or Miniatures, one of those three, and they had a knockoff ED-209, which they just called Military Robot. And it's like, yeah, okay, fine, I'll buy that because that's nowhere else. That's fine. It's just different enough to not break copyright or anything like that. But, you know, I'd like a little miniature of an ED-209. That'd be quite fun. And they were so pleased, and they talked about it, and it was like, thanks for waiting. It's like, that's fine. Everyone's just buying stuff. I'd encourage you to do that. Go into your local gaming store. It might be a Warhammer place, in which case they're only going to talk to you about Warhammer products, but they are set up to help you in. And what I find interesting when I do go to my local Warhammer place is that it's full of kids, whereas Salute, far older. Yes, a lot of dads have brought their kids along, like Ben had done, but there's a sort of middle gap. There are very few 20-somethings, 30-somethings, and very few women. But the last thing I'm going to say is it is interesting how there was this wonderful board that looked like the Giant's Causeway, and it was, I can't even remember the name of it, but it was a really fantastical, like, British myth-type tabletop fighting game. It looked wonderful and whimsical and something that Warhammer wouldn't touch with a brush, but we need games like that, whatever it may be. It just instantly drew me in. It's like, oh, that's just a thing of beauty. And the artwork was the beautiful pencil drawings rather than the precision paintings that you get nowadays with Warhammer. It reminded me very much of fantasy roleplay games of the 1980s. It was lovely and beautiful. Actually, Sughammer's Goblins would fit in quite well with the aesthetic of that one. But you get more than anything else. There was one game on the Boxer Rebellion. There's one game on Pegasus Bridge. There was one game about Stalingrad. You know, there is loads and loads of military stuff there. And so I just want to finish off with the father and son team, these two Prussians who created Kriegsspiel.
Stick around, listeners, to hear all about Kriegsspiel. What a wonderful tease. But before that, a few words from Jim to the organisers of Salute.
A few practical points now from somebody who worked for years in exhibitions on multiple different exhibitions. If anybody who's organising Salute hears this, I'm giving this to you for free, okay? So, when you walk around, it was really busy. My friend said, Ben said, that it was the busiest he'd ever seen it, and it certainly seemed pretty lively. However, the actual way that you had to be fed in, they did a pretty good job of doing that. But they took up an entire hall to feed people through, and they just didn't need that. But the main thing is this. So this is the question out to the Salute organisers, is what do you want Salute to be? If you want it to be, if you guys are just a bunch of really avid fans of tabletop roleplay games and you just want it to be a kind of cheap and cheerful gathering together where people make their fun, fine, okay? Mission accomplished. That's what you're doing. But if you actually want this to be a representation of something, you want it to grow. You want to more people to come. You want the people who buy the stands to go for something bigger, a bit more elaborate, etc. Is this actually a business opportunity for you? Well, at the moment, it looks like amateur hour. You shouldn't have loads of hazard tape up. And I know that it costs thousands of pounds to carpet it, and the carpets get scuffed up over 3 days. I know that because I used to be in it. But to have the bare concrete floor where you can see all of the sort of build references for other builds on the past scribbled onto the floor looks cheap. Same thing with your presentation room as well. Yes, you've put it up with black lining and it's clipped up. Fine, but that is cheap and cheerful. So if you want people to enjoy the experience more, we've got to feel like we're actual valued customers rather than here's a carrier bag, it's got some stuff in it, and then off we go. Also, something when it comes to the brochure that shows you where everything is, you've got it down by where everything is in the show and not alphabetically. So if I'm trying to find a specific company, I can't find them. I have to know which stand they're at. Every other show, when it comes to the catalogue, it does it both ways. So I can work out what's down this aisle, but also where is Pepsi, for want of a better phrase. You know, obviously that's not a company that's going to be Salute. So, yeah, you need to work out what you actually want it to do. If it is just a bunch of amateurs who want this to just be good, clean fun for the family, you've probably grown to about as large as you're going to get. But I'm guessing if you're going to XL rather than something smaller, for example, you probably want this to grow, in which case you need to speak to somebody who's actually worked in exhibitions before. Both myself and Ben have done, and we both have thoughts that could generate more income for you, but also make it a more pleasant experience for the paying public as they go around. Now, if you think about it, simulating war has been a game for centuries, if not thousands of years. Chess, in essence, is a battlefield. It's just a really bad one because you've got equal sides, no terrain whatsoever. It's all pure logic and strategy. There is no chance to it whatsoever. And so what happened in 1812, right in the middle of the Napoleonic Wars, is we get one Prussian coming up with this idea of Kriegsspiel, which is literally war game. And so earlier in the 1700s, it had started to develop, but Kriegsspiel was the real pinnacle of trying to reproduce battle conditions. So terrain was brought into account. Things like cavalry could move faster than infantry. It was all still tokens on a board, I guess a bit like a chess game, but the board now actually looked far more like an actual battlefield. The first version was in 1812, and then the son took it up. Both had been in the Prussian military in 1824, and this is one of the things that became standard as part of the training in Prussia. Prussia always had the smaller army, and yet you got in 1870, the Franco-Prussian War, where the smaller Prussian army, which is far more disciplined, manages to beat the French, who had been the terrors. Generally, throughout history, France was always the country to beat. Yes, there were famous defeats, you know, most notably under Napoleon, example. But the reason why that was such a big deal is because he'd spent decades using the French army to bully the whole of the rest of Europe, including Prussia. But you got something like the Franco-Prussian War, and this huge victory for Prussia, which leads to the formation of Germany. So Germany gets created almost by accident because of their success against the French. And you've got this German militarism that so impressed the rest of the world that Kriegsspiel starts spreading into other countries. To give you an idea, America was still calling it Kriegsspiel at the outbreak of World War I. So a century after the initial rules had been created, it's still being used in military academies, and indeed there were retired generals who would be able to play Kriegsspiel over the post to each other. It's like, I move here, I send the cavalry or cannons or whatever into that direction. Incredibly modular. You can actually get online the original Kriegsspiel, but it was that game, that simulator really, that is the granddaddy of things like Dungeons and Dragons and all of these games that you're seeing here. It introduced the concept of rolling dice, the chances of luck, the chances of strategy alone isn't enough, that we do have to take into account that armies aren't of equal size, equal components, or equal terrain as well. So you've got a through line to the Prussian army from more than 200 years ago even, that's happening here in Salute, but also at the same time it's family friendly. It just has this wonderful, joyous feel to it. And therefore, I thought I would share that with you today. So even on this podcast, you know, we talk about how pop culture has been influenced by history. This is a classic example. This is a whole genre of games that is influenced by real history and real attempts to try and simulate history on a tabletop, looking at military history, which is something I hope you found as fascinating as I did. Thanks very much for listening. And as always, another episode coming soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.